Blog Talk Radio.
Quotation mark, yeah, I'm giving you a long look.
Every day
I write the book. Oh man, I tell you what, it has been one heck of a day. Not much going on. Nope. Obama is beginning his re-election bid, and in very ominous fashion and quite disturbing. The White House, well, wait, let's take care of some business here. Today's date, December 28, 2010, gorgeous Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I am your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Okay. Have you seen the picture? Come on now. Have you seen the picture? If you haven't seen the picture, you got to go take a look at the picture. And the picture I'm speaking of, you ask, you say, what's this guy talking about? The picture on Fox Nation of Barack Obama shirtless. Dude is like 40-something years old, and he looks like a 10-year-old boy. And that is not an attractive thing for a grown man. I mean, I'm not into guys, and, you know, I don't really care who is, but, you know, it's not my, I mean, it's neither here nor there. But I think the point I'm trying to get to, and I'm getting to it right now, is never trust a man who doesn't have hair on his chest unless he shaves it for, like, a, you know, he's Michael Phelps and he needs to, you know, shave or something because he's going to swim in the Olympics or something like that. Or, I mean, dude. I mean, it almost looks like he has breasts, as skinny as he is. It's a horrible picture. No wonder folks think he's such a chump. He looks like a girl. He looks like an ugly chick with man boobs, as skinny as he is. Oh, man, that is not a good thing. Okay. Oh, my goodness. That is horrible. I almost feel bad for him. Almost. That is a horrible picture. Not macho. Nothing macho happening there. Maybe he was trying to do a Vladimir Putin. You know, he doesn't have, like, Putin's not all cut up. You know, he's not ripped. But, you know, when you see Putin, like, he's got a bear's head in his hand, or he's toting a really big shotgun, or, you know, an axe or something. You know, he's riding bareback on a horse with no shirt on. You know, he's doing all kinds of manly stuff. Barack Obama's just kind of strolling, you know, looking like a chick, an ugly girl. It's disgusting. Stand Vladimir Putin next to Barack Obama and take a picture of the two. You've got Putin on a horse riding bareback, no shirt on, an axe slung over his shoulder or something, you know, or maybe a rifle slung over his back, a high-powered rifle at that. He's just riding, and it's like wintertime, and it's 30 degrees outside. That's Putin. So we've got Barack Obama, though. He's just kind of strolling around shirtless, no hair on his chest, looking like a 10-year-old boy from the neck down, and he's eating a snow cone. So, yeah, I got the picture here of him munching down on a snow cone. Wish you were here. Obama enjoys a Hawaiian vacation where the only ice is his frozen dessert. I mean, don't you just call it a snow cone? But no, I guess it's called a frozen dessert. President Obama is soaking up the warmth of Hawaii as he continues on his 65th vacation since taking office just 2 years ago. As he continues his Christmas holiday, does he even classify it as Christmas? His holiday as being Christmas? And even indulged in his own version of snow while millions of Americans dig out from a blizzard. I mean, I don't begrudge the guy being in beautiful, you know, and sunny and warm Hawaii. I mean, I wish I could be there too. I mean, let's all be fair about that. But he's chowing down on a tasty treat here. Where's Michelle? I mean, shouldn't she be smacking his little girly little hand and saying, you can't have that tasty treat because it'll get you all fat? You know, or maybe it'll put hair on his chest. Maybe it'll put a little hair on his chest. Why? Wow, he looks like a horrible, I mean, it's a horrible picture. Just check it out on Fox Nation. He just looks horrible. I mean, he doesn't look like a man at all. I would like to throw a shout out. Later on, I'm going to give Fox a call and ask him if they, or maybe even MSNBC and ask them if they'll post a picture of Putin riding a bear, you know, a grizzly bear or something, riding bareback on a grizzly bear, shirtless, with a high-powered rifle slung over his back. And an axe, and then an axe in one hand, and holding on to the bear's fur with the other, in 30 degree weather, and then put the picture posted up of Barack Obama walking shirtless, looking like a 10-year-old boy. My goodness, I have words for any lady who is seeking a husband these days. Never choose a man who does not have hair on his chest. I mean, that is just horrible. I mean, how can you be a man? Oh, man, I tell you what. Okay, down to business now. The 11th Congress added more debt than the first 100 Congresses combined. A total of 10,429 people. Per person in the United States. Okay, what do we have here? We have Barack Obama spending $3 trillion, which is more than all other presidents combined. All. And now we have the Democrat Congress spending more than the first 100 Congresses. Does anybody see a pattern here? And aren't we glad that the November elections are somewhat have provided a speed bump to the road to the demise of the United States as we know it? The federal government has accumulated more new debt, $3.22 trillion, during the tenure of the 111th Congress than did during the first 100 Congresses combined, according to official debt figures published by the U.S. Treasury. That equals $10,429.64 in new debt for each and every one of the 309 million people counted in the United States by the 2010 census. And I'm rounding it off by a few thousand. That's a lot of money. And when you think about it, the Debt Commission, and more recently, Senator Colburn, warned of apocalyptic pain ahead if we don't stop spending so much. But the Democrats don't seem to be all that concerned about all this massive spending. Now, I asked the same question I asked yesterday. Is Barack Obama a genius, or is he a complete moron? If he's a genius, he is running us into massive amounts of debt to bring about the downfall of our economy and bring the country down to the level of a third world country. And as Glenn Beck stated earlier today on his show, send the United States spiraling so out of control financially that the government will have no choice but to clamp down on its citizens and take total control, thus fundamentally transforming the United States of America. Or could it be that Barack Obama is a complete and utter moron, and that he has no idea what he's doing? Now, in one of my shows, I talked about Obama being the phrase that's been bannered about Obama being the smartest man in the room. I don't even know where to begin. Obama's problem as the smartest person in the room. Since Obama first stepped on the national stage, pundits have fallen all over each other in a race to declare that Obama is a special type of genius. Huh. Could it be that Obama is a genius and he knows exactly what he's doing? By totally disrupting our nation's economy to the point where it'll no longer function and he'll be forced to declare martial law and then take over everything. And then he'll say, well, it was an emergency situation. I didn't want to do these things. Remember what he said after the shellacking, on the day after the shellacking, when he stood at the podium and said that, well, you know, I mean, it was a sign of things to come for me. I mean, I noticed it right away when he said, you know, I didn't want to take over car companies. I didn't want to take over, you know, I didn't want to do all these things. Yeah, shellacking, that's right. I didn't want to do all these things. It was an emergency situation. So maybe Barack Obama is attempting to create more emergency situations so that when the time comes, he'll be able to say that he really didn't have any choice. He didn't really want to have to do these things. It was an emergency. Have you noticed all of the folks who are coming out of the woodwork, all of these pundits, people like Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and so many others, calling for a redistribution or realignment of our monetary system, of our capitalist system, of our government, and how we enact with the FCC's virtual takeover of the internet. And then Al Sharpton calling for the FCC to clamp down on free speech. Which one? Who should be tarred and feathered? Obama or Sharpton? Or both? These folks are just coming out. You know, when George Bush was president, these folks wouldn't dare rear their ugly heads. They would have been afraid to. Not because what George would have done, but because the mood of America certainly was different. It's as if Barack Obama, with his socialist Marxist views, have given rise to all these voices that were certainly muted before his election. But now any and every and all Marxists are coming out of the woodwork. Let's take a listen to Jesse Jackson and try to figure out. Well, first, we need to try to figure out what the hell he's saying, because I have never been able to understand the man. I don't even understand how he gets a public forum, because it seems to be completely unable to speak. But let's listen.
So I would hope that the president goes to the well, as it were, and speaks when he goes to the Congress in January, there'd be some renewed commitment to have a revived war on poverty, because most poor people are not on welfare. They work every day. I went to a homeless shelter in San Francisco a month ago, and most of the women and children, they work every day but couldn't afford rent. Some of them work every day whose husbands are in Iraq or Afghanistan. It's time for a radical reorienting of our economy bottom up, because those at the very top are drowning in wealth. It's paper driven, not even productivity driven, and working poor find themselves taking 4 million more home foreclosures in the coming year.
All right. Where does one begin with this moron? You know, I am a Chicago native. I grew up in Chicago. I grew up approximately 7 blocks from what was then called Operation Breadbasket, later renamed Operation Push. The way Jesse Jackson got his money was very simple. He took a page from the mafia. It's called extortion. What he would do was he would go to a company such as Honda Corporation. And he would say to them, you know, he'd arrange a meeting, and he'd go in and he'd speak with the executives, and he'd say to them, you know, we believe that your operation is inherently racist. And if some form of accommodation isn't made, then what we plan to do is picket and boycott Honda Corporation. Honda would throw up its hands, immediately capitulate, because they don't want the bad press. They're trying to sell cars. You know, they don't want any trouble. You sound familiar? They don't want any trouble. So they go ahead and give them a couple hundred thousand. They can afford it. They throw $200,000 or $300,000 his way, and all would be good. So he'd go to the next business, and he'd get all this money together. He'd bring it back, and he'd expand Operation Breadbasket and Operation Push. And he would distribute turkeys Thanksgiving, Christmas. This is what he did in Chicago. He would have food drives where he wouldn't use any of that money that he got from any of those corporations. No, because Jesse would have a new Cadillac. And Jesse was living in Hyde Park, which is right on the cusp of Operation Breadbasket / Operation Push, just a couple blocks away. So he lived in Hyde Park, same place where as Barack Obama lives. And, of course, that's where I live. But he didn't live in the ghetto. He lived in a black neighborhood. He lived in Hyde Park. So he'd take all this money, and he'd keep it. And he'd pay his staff, and he'd, you know, they'd get a little cut. And then he'd have food drives where he'd have money, he'd have stores contribute. So very little money came out of Jesse's pocket. And then he had all this money come in, and he'd use it for his own purposes. So now we have Jesse Jackson on MSNBC with a banner reading, "Do you think the Republicans care about the middle class?" Jesse's calling for redistribution of wealth because rich people have so much money and poor people are so poor, and that rich people should just give their money to the poor folks, or Obama should take it from them and give it to poor folks because houses are being foreclosed on, folks can't pay the rent, blah, 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 blah. Same Jesse speak that Jesse's been speaking since I was a small child. It's all about wealth envy, taking money from one person and giving to another just because they don't have it. Never mind, you know, they didn't punch the usual tickets. They didn't go to high school. They dropped out because it was all so hard. Didn't go to college, even though they could have gotten grants or scholarships or something. They didn't do that because, you know, that was too difficult too. That was an excuse. And they didn't start a business or go work at a company or start in the mailroom or any of that stuff. None of those cliches. They didn't do any of that. Instead, they sat around the house doing absolutely nothing, waiting to get something for nothing. No, Jesse cannot enunciate, and he blames it on the fact that he's from Alabama. I know a lot of folks from Alabama. It's not that far from here. You know, none of them speak that way. He can barely understand what he's saying. But nevertheless, this is what it's all about. This is what this government, this administration is all about. It's taking from one group of people to give to the next. And Obama will do whatever it takes to get that job done. And so what we have to wonder is, what are we going to do to stop this? Now, what we have done is elect a Republican Congress. But we're going to have to go a step further than that, because Barack Obama is not going to go quietly into that good night. More and more, these radicals are calling for a radical reordering of the American economy. Barack Obama is a Marxist. He was right when he said he wasn't a socialist. He's a Marxist, which is worse. It's all about social justice for him, or what he classifies as social justice. It will be so interesting to see what's going to happen with this new Congress and how he plans to handle things. Already he's pulled out the pen and signed two or three executive orders just over the Christmas holiday in an order to circumvent Congress and the Constitution. One wonders if, you know, Barack Obama came into office. I never believed it, but he came into office and he said that he was going to be a different kind of president. He was going to be the guy who came in and bridged parties. There would be no red states or blue states, only the United States. He came in saying that there was going to be a new way of operating in Washington. Little did we know what he meant by that. But I tend to think that he is He is driving us off of a cliff. And that the savior of the left, their deity, baby Jesus Obama, is going to send this country into civil war. I mean, I'm hearing metaphors like grab your pitchforks and there's going to be a revolution and all that stuff. And people who say these things, of course, they pull back a little bit and they say, well, you know, I don't mean anything, you know, violent, but still they say these things. I believe that Barack Obama is going to be the transformational president he said he was going to be. But it's not going to be in a good way. I believe that Barack Obama is in a position now to bring about the destruction, the downfall of the United States of America as we know it. With every radical step he takes. Does anyone recall when he said that under his plan of cap and trade, that utility bills, and I'm paraphrasing that part, because I think he meant electric bills, would necessarily skyrocket? Why would he want that? Why would he want our bills as U.S. citizens to skyrocket? Who would vote for him if that ever happened? But yet, over the Christmas holiday, the EPA has created new rules that will circumvent Congress in the approach to cap and trade. So cap and trade wasn't dead. And he said so the day of the shellacking. He said going through Congress as a means to achieve cap and trade, well, that's just one way to skin the cat. So ask yourself, why would the President of the United States want to increase the level and increase the output of your funds for something so that you would use less of it? And just like yesterday, why would the President of the United States want to create a civilian national security force that is just as powerful and just as well-funded as the United States military? Why would he want to do that? I mean, individually, some of the things he says just sound, they just sound fantastic. But when you put them all together, this dude is the fucking Antichrist. He's the Antichrist. I mean, why is he saying all these crazy stuff? And folks are just clapping. Yay! All right, Obama, we're with you, man. Okay, all right. There's so much going on in the world, and I've been talking about this craziness. And let's get down to some real business before we get out of here. I'm already 30 minutes in. After the 2010 elections, it's not exactly news that Obama has lost America. No kidding. But in a less public referendum, he also lost the world. Obama's cocktail party tour of the world's capitals may look impressive on a map, but it's irrelevant on a policy level. In less than 2 years, the White House has gone from being the center of the world, the center of world leadership, to being irrelevant. From protecting world freedom to serving as a global party planning committee. Even the Bush administration's harshest critics could never have credibly claimed that George W. Bush was irrelevant. He might have been hated, shouted about, but he couldn't be ignored. However, Obama can be safely ignored, invited to parties, given the chance to show off his cosmopolitan sophistication by reciting one or two words in the local language, read off a teleprompter along with some rant about the need for everyone to pull together and make the world a better place, and then dismissed for the rest of the evening. Just a party favor. You're just like a centerpiece on your table. But as a world leader, he makes a nice party guest. He has a nice smile, brings along his own gifts, and is famous in the way that celebrities, rather than prime ministers and presidents, are famous. On an invitation list, he's more Bono than Sarkozy. Leonardo DiCaprio, not Vladimir Putin. You don't invite him to talk turkey. Not even on Thanksgiving. He's just one of those famous people with a passing interest in politics who gets good media attention, who has nothing worthwhile to say without that damn teleprompter. What guy needs a teleprompter anyway when you're standing in front of a classroom of fifth graders? I kid you not. He's standing in front of a group of fifth graders and he's using a teleprompter. He's in a cabinet level meeting with six people besides himself, and he's using a teleprompter. The only countries that take Obama seriously are the ones who have to. The leaders of Great Britain, Israel, and Japan, who have tied their countries to the enduring alliance of America, based on mutual interest and values, only to discover that the latest fellow to sit behind the Oval Office desk no longer shares those values and couldn't give less of a damn about American interest. It's no wonder that European leaders ignore him as much as possible, or that Netanyahu visited America while Obama was somewhere else, or that Japanese politics have become dangerously unstable. On the enemy side, the growing aggressiveness of China, North Korea, Iran, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda can all be attributed to the global consensus that no one is at home in the White House. Think of it. Somali insurgents have stated that Obama must convert to Islam, or attacks on the United States of America will come. Think about that for just one moment. A group of thugs, no better than the El Rukins back home in Chicago, the Black Gangster Disciples, the Latin Kings. Would any of those groups demand that Obama do anything? No. Those are all street gangs, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know. Chicago street gangs. And these guys are on their level. So, and this is coming from a near 30-year Marine combat vet. These guys are on the level of a street gang, pretty much. So, think about this for a moment. Would these guys demand anything of Ronald Wilson Reagan? Would they demand anything of George Bush, Jr., Senior, or W? Would they demand anything of Nixon? Would they demand anything like this of even Bill Clinton? Well, this is sorry, but no. But we have a president who's pretty much seen as a punk, a chump, a coward, a pansy, with no hair on his chest. Oh, yeah, you know what? I should have included them. I hope nobody feels slighted. Let me go ahead and throw a shout-out to the Crips and the Bloods and the New Jersey affiliates. All right. Got those guys out of the way. Hey, shout out to you, brothers. But anyway, so now that we got that out of the way, let's see if we did I miss anybody else? No, I think I got everybody. We got everybody now, I think. If I missed anybody, you know, please, you know, I'll just throw me an email. And I get you back next. I get you tomorrow. All right, so we got. In this picture, this recent picture of Obama walking around with the chest of a 10-year-old boy is not going to help. Isn't it any wonder that the White House sought to have those pictures hidden? I mean, not that I've ever seen the cover of a gay porn magazine, but I think that Obama's shirtless, scrawny ass would do well on the cover of one of those. Not that there's anything wrong with that. All right, so, but this is why you have Somali groups demanding that the president convert to Islam. The president of the United States of America, they are demanding that he convert to Islam or else. Doesn't it make you long for the days of Ronald Reagan? These guys would be afraid. They'd be cowering in a cave somewhere or somewhere in the desert. Afraid to rear their heads for fear that a missile is going to go right up their asses. All right, so my party guest, our partier in chief, our vacationer in chief, our teleprompter in chief, is feared by no one, and very few world leaders take him seriously at all. We've come to that conclusion. Now we've got Iran, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, North Korea, China. There's a consensus. Nobody's home at the White House. This guy's always on vacation, so they're absolutely right. He's always on vacation. He has vacation more in the 2 years he's been in office than I have my whole life. And I exaggerate not. Can the job be that hard? And if no one is home in the White House, then that's the perfect time to slap Obama around the yard. China's doing it economically. The rest are doing it militarily. They're all on board with Obama's post-American vision of the world. But unlike him and most liberals, they have a clear understanding of what that means. The America for some years back, which actually intimidated Libyan dictator Gaddafi into giving up his nuclear program without lifting a hand against him, is long gone. Long gone. Indeed. And he's eating the pie while his ugly troll of a wife, who seems to be getting fatter by the day, is telling us that we shouldn't eat any pie. And certainly that our kids shouldn't have any pie. Don't get me started. LFNJ, you know what? We can't have any pie. Because it's bad for us. And it's bad for our kids. They're going to get all fat. And it's going to be a national security issue. That's what she said. So they can chow down on some pie. I wish I knew who that pastor was or is. Because she is not attractive. And folks are going around talking about how beautiful she is, how attractive she is, how lovely she is. Are you kidding? All right. So America intimidated Gaddafi into giving up his nuclear program. Didn't have to lay a finger on him. Now, Syria and Iran are back in charge in Lebanon. And in Afghanistan, the Taliban are laughing at our soft power outreach efforts. Obama's soft power approach emphasizes the soft and forgets the power. It neglects even Clinton-era understanding about the role of America in the world and reverts instead to a Carter-era sense of guilt that bleeds into hostility towards American interests and allies, while the rest of the world puts their own interest first. They act like a cog in some imaginary global community, turning and turning and turning toward the distant horizon of international brotherhood. It all sounds like a bunch of crap. You know, Obama reminds me of that little chump in the schoolyard. And how everybody just wanted to slap him around because they could. This guy has no idea what he's doing. None, mind you. You know, no disrespect for anyone who didn't have a father at home in about what I'm about to say. If you didn't have dad at home, like Obama didn't have dad, sometimes, just sometimes, you grow up and you're not as often as manly as you should be. Not as confident. You act like you're confident, but you're not. You're not. And when you're reading from a teleprompter with six people in the room, how smart can you be? For the first time, this administration has curried favor with America's enemies by betraying and humiliating its own allies. These hideous acts of moral cowardice have not won Obama the approval of America's enemies. Only their contempt. You know, why didn't he learn this lesson? I learned this lesson as a 6-year-old living in Chicago. There were bullies down the street. I sought to appease the bullies. And I gave them all my candy. Tossed, chucked over a few of my toys. And I thought, they'll be my friends now. Everything's going to be groovy. They're going to really like me. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. They just wanted to take more of my stuff. And they expected it. And they expected me to be a chump. They expected me to be a little sissy. Finally, my dad got wind of it. And of course, there was a showdown. I came out on the short end of that stick, as I recall, but there was a renewed amount of respect. The boys no longer bothered me, and I didn't bother them. Is that what's going to happen here? Is Obama going to be pushed and pushed and pushed until he either falls down like the chump that he seems to be, or is he going to fight back? So he's seeking the approval of our enemies, but he's getting only our enemies' contempt, just like I did as a six-year-old. I learned from that lesson. Obama probably didn't get that lesson. He probably didn't get that one. Or so it seems. He got a Nobel Prize from a committee of elderly left-wing Swedes awarded for no particular accomplishment, but for the lack of accomplishment. Just being a man without a country, a leader without a spine, and a representative of America who gives no thought for the interest of America. How does he expect to be respected, one wonders? Can you respect a man who has no principles, who cares for nothing but only to bootlick and curry favor? He's a bootlicker. He's a butt kisser. He's a brown noser. Brown nosers don't get respect. Just the opposite. And here we have this man in the White House, a butt kisser, a brown noser, brown nosing the global community and bad mouthing his own country. That borders to me on treason. An impeachment, something. I mean, wouldn't you agree? I mean, one would have to. He is putting this country in great danger by bootlicking our enemies and casting aside our friends. He wasn't in the White House a full day before he ordered the removal of a bust of Winston Churchill that was given to America as a gift by Great Britain. This guy takes things personally. The reason for that removal of the bust, he ordered it sent back, as a matter of fact, as a classy move, was because his grandfather had been tortured or something of that nature, or mistreated by some UK folks. So he carried that grudge with him in a story that he'd heard when he was a child. Got into the White House and ordered that that bust be removed. When he was presented with a precious gift upon taking office by the UK's Prime Minister, he returned the favor by giving in return a stack of DVDs, not even Blu-ray. I kid you not. Dude gave, it's like a friend comes to you, a good close ally, a good friend of yours, shows up and hands you a $15,000 to $20,000 Rolex watch, diamond and clustered watch. And you hand him an Iron Man 2 DVD, Batman Beyond, Batman the Beginning. Then you throw in A Touch of Evil, and then Sex and the City 2, You grab them all together and you say, hey, thanks, man. Here, I got something for you. Here's something for you. And you put them all in a Kroger grocery bag. That's basically what he did. I think he received a couple of really great fountain pens, and they're made from the wood of the HMS, and I forget the name of the ship. I'm really sorry. But it was made from the wood of these great ships, and he responded with some DVDs. And what did he give the Queen of England upon his visit? An iPod. Second generation. With all of his speeches on it. This is how he treats allies of the United States of America. We have 10 minutes left. Let's wrap this up. Now that the Koreans stand on the brink of war, Iran continues its drive towards a nuclear bomb. Al-Qaeda is going global. Hezbollah is on the verge of taking Lebanon, and Mexico is on the verge of imploding, while Obama vacations and is seen chowing down on a snow cone or a frosty treat, shirtless, with the body of a 10-year-old boy. While all this is going on, while Rome burned, Obama had a tasty treat, shirtless and hairless. Right now, you know what? This is blasphemous, but right now I would much rather have Vladimir Putin than Barack Obama. I'm talking about a man riding bareback in 30-degree weather with a rifle slung over his shoulder, just chilling. That's a man you can respect, not a 10-year-old boy, completely hairless, eating a snow cone. There's a metaphor in there. Okay, I don't mean to harp on the whole 10-year-old boy eating a snow cone, because that's what he looks like, and Vladimir Putin kind of looks like a stud who's like, you know, you don't want to mess around with. And that, because I think that, you know, type A guy like me, we want that kind of guy running things. We don't want some chump, you know, some hairless boy eating a snow cone running my country. I don't know how you feel about that, but you know, I just can't do it. Nevertheless, the impact of America's absence on the global stage is all too clear. The countless cocktail parties and toasts, they've not changed the world. All they've done is heighten the transition of the White House from world leadership to global party guests. Trip after trip after trip after trip has ended in photo ops and policy failures. Instead, Obama is stuck dumpster diving in the futile quest for a Palestinian state. Not because such an entity would make the world any better, but because it would make him look good. And we know that's all he really cares about. Even though the photo of him eating the snow cone shirtless is outrageously funny and makes him look seriously like a sissy, he cannot possibly think he looks good in that photo. Obama has no mandate here in the United States, and he has less of one abroad. Remember when he was a rock star, when all the world was his stage? Now, he's seen mostly around the world as the buffoon that he is. America's enemies don't fear him. Only our allies do. Kim Jong-il does not sit up nights worrying what Obama will do, because the consensus in North Korea, Iran, and the rest of the world is that the sea will rise, the sun will set, and Obama will do absolutely nothing but go on vacation. He might write a strongly worded letter, offset by some quiet back-channel diplomacy from the comfort of his, well, from the comfort of his beach house, the beach house he's rented from taxpayer dollars, overlooking a beautiful Hawaiian mountainside. No, Barry really isn't mad at you. He's just concerned. That's all. He's just really very, very concerned. Liberal pundits mock the rough and ready style of conservatives like Reagan, Bush, or even Palin in world affairs. But what they fail to realize is that the overeducated, naivete, trendy, cosmopolitanism. I need some water. The buzzword rich approach of Kerry or Obama come off as pathetic on the world stage. Weak. Republicans might be hated. They can't be ignored. Democrats, on the other hand, are pawns, fools, who are so sure of their cleverness and determined to embrace every culture in the way that only the graduates of Ivy League institutions can, that any third world vendor could twirl them around their fingers. World leaders are rarely liked, but effective ones are respected. And effective world leaders don't lead with appeasement. Think of Neville Chamberlain and how Hitler ate his lunch for him and his dinner too. No, real leaders don't compromise before the other side has even made an offer. Rather than some intangible global consensus, they understand that they represent a country, not a popularity contest. They don't travel abroad to be adored, greeted with parades and gifts, but to achieve tangible results on specific issues. This is where Obama fails. This is where Obama's inexperience as a world leader comes into play. This guy is not clever. He is not brilliant. He is the destroyer of our world, the United States of America. And 2012 can't come soon enough. Thank you for listening, and I hope y'all have a wonderful evening. And hey, well, let's get back together tomorrow and we'll talk some more. And perhaps we'll take some calls. And I hope you have a good evening, and I hope everybody makes it safely through the night and into the morning and on through the day. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones, and I will see you tomorrow. ¶¶